I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 17th of April. Elizabeth Rosenthal is with us again today. She has been writing an extremely important series titled Paying Till It Hurts. She writes for the New York Times, and it's been going on for some months now. There is a new piece on April 5. She wrote a lengthy article, Even Small Medical Advances Can Mean Big Jumps in Bills. And she looks at the high price of new treatments, specifically for diabetes. She spends a lot of time on type 1 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis as well, colitis, and other chronic diseases that contribute, she writes, mightily to the $2.7 trillion annual health care bill in this country. And she, as always, compares with other countries as well, where in most other developed countries, she writes, with or without national health systems, they provide free care and supplies for people who have these kinds of chronic diseases. So why is it that so many people are paying so much money out of pocket in America? Elizabeth has a very interesting background. She is a trained medical doctor. She is doing this series, which is a year-long series. From 2004 to 2013, she was the international environment correspondent for The Times. She was a correspondent in the Beijing Bureau and broke a number of landmark stories on healthcare in China, including the spread of HIV, the demise of the rural healthcare system, and efforts to market patented U.S. drugs in China. She's with us this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and specifically, you're all welcome to join because it's healthcare and money in healthcare, which is always generating a lot of phone calls. But a particularly call to those of you who may be experiencing a chronic disease, type 1 diabetes, or someone in your family, and you can give us personal stories of how what has happened to you in terms of paying out of pocket and what's happened in terms of managing the disease. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for being with us again. Where are we here? Oh, she's on ISDN. I'm sorry, I didn't look away. It's a special thing here. There we go.
I'm still here.
Yes, you are. Every time I read one of your articles, you're so darn good. And I read these and I get very upset. And I'm thinking, we need to know all of this. Most Americans don't know what's going on in the healthcare field. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, it's been incredible for me, too, to learn. I knew it was bad, but I didn't know exactly why. And I think that's the point of the series. We all know from looking at our bills that American health care is very expensive. And we probably heard that it's more expensive than elsewhere in the world. But my goal was to find out for all of these conditions, well, why? Where is the money going? Right. What are we getting? Because we all know we're not getting better results overall.
Yeah. A lot of the article deals with type 1 diabetes. And if you would, start with a story, and you start the article with Catherine Haley, who's been on this for a while. And I am just feeling for her and other people because they're paying so much more money out of pocket with all these treatment replacements. And it's very expensive.
Yes, and I think the way we focused in on type 1 diabetes was we'd gotten a lot of complaints. You know, the series has been very interactive. We've had a lot of comments, and we asked people, what's a disease that you'd like us to focus on where cost has become a big issue? And we got tons of responses from people with type 1 diabetes. And, you know, this is a serious condition. It's a lifelong condition. It's different than type 2 diabetes, where your body is still making some insulin. People with type 1 diabetes need insulin or they die. And so it's not kind of optional. You need to pay. As one of the patients in the story said, they have you over a barrel. Now, and the good side is that treatments for type 1 diabetes have gotten much, much better in the last quarter century. So people are living longer. They can live more normal lives. You know, everything's better about it. except the cost is astronomical. And I think that's what Catherine was one of the commenters who had written in to us in response to other articles. And what she wanted to show us was, yes, you know, my life is much, much better than when I was 9 and was, you know, injecting with syringes into an orange to practice. But boy, the price is really hurting.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a number of different components. You talk about the pump, right. The new pump that she's going to have to buy, and insurance pays, you know, a good chunk of it, but she has to pay $2,500. She needs monitor probes that have to be replaced every week, disposable tubing she has to change, 10 test strips a day. All of that really adds up.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. You know, she is someone with good insurance. Imagine if you didn't have good insurance. And many of us, like Catherine, are experiencing more of the cost because insurance increasingly has out-of-pocket copays and deductibles, which people need to face. And that's in part to get you to feel the cost of your medical treatment. But if you have a disease like type 1 diabetes or Crohn's or rheumatoid arthritis, those copayments can be really, really make it difficult to access care. And that's really a problem.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, which I thought was an interesting way to look at this, that there's kind of an Apple model at work here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the pumps, I mean, I think Catherine's first quote is quite remarkable, you know, and she says, well, here's my pump. It looks like a beeper. It's made of plastic. It runs on AAA batteries, and it's the most expensive thing I own aside from my house.
Wow.
And that means, and she said, and I mean even more than my car. I thought maybe my car, but no, this is more expensive than my car. And part of the problem is that pump is her new pump will be about $7,500. Yes, she'll only have to buy that probably once every 3 or 4 years. But it's not just the pump. I mean, the supplies are constantly changing and you're constantly having to buy them. The comparison I like are two, both from technology. It's kind of like my printer at home where, you know, I practically got it for free. I think it was $50. But every time I want to change the cartridge, which is a lot,
yes.
It's $20.
Right.
So it's that kind of thing for some of the diabetes equipment. In others, it's more like the iPhone model where I may be happy as I was with my iPhone 3, but I can't keep it because you can't buy them anymore. It's not compatible with any of their systems. So there's this kind of planned obsolescence built into some of the technology. So, and it's not to say there haven't been real improvements. And I think I want to make that clear because a lot of people were reacted very harshly to the article saying, oh, you're saying there's been no, you know, these improvements aren't meaningful. And I think, as with the iPhone, and not to belittle diabetes technology because it's life-saving and an iPhone isn't, but there are some things that are really, really wonderful and other improvements where you think, this is just so I can be charged more. And those improvements may be useful to some people. We got a lot of pushback because we at one point talked about a bilingual talking meter, which – yes, if you are visually impaired or don't speak English, a bilingual talking meter will be great for you and you should get one.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't need one and everyone is paying more because the companies are constantly, you know, quote unquote, innovating in ways that are not necessarily useful but allow them to charge more.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about this genetic engineering process that has been used to produce insulin now so that a medicine, you write, that cost a few dollars when the patient was a child now sells more than $200 a vial. It's a good thing, I would imagine, to have this synthetic insulin. But why is it that there aren't generics in this country that would bring down the cost?
Well, it's a long story that's common to drug development, particularly biological drug development in this country. I mean, the animal insulins that people used when I was a doctor, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, they came from pigs mostly, sometimes cows. They caused a little bit of irritation because it was a foreign, an injection of something foreign. And then when recombinant DNA technology came in, gene splicing, you know, you could make actual human insulin in bacterial cells, and that was great. So then there were lines of human insulin that was real human insulin. But, you know, basically in a natural body that is producing insulin, insulin's produced all the time. So giving 4 or 5 shots of human insulin a day doesn't exactly mimic what a pancreas would do. So they kind of tweak these human insulin molecules to make the absorption slightly different, slightly faster, which, again, can help some people and is probably it's better in some sense, but not necessary for the vast majority of people with diabetes. And yet the cost goes up. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, what happens, these are called insulin analogs, is now they're essentially in a lot of the world the only thing on the market, including in the older products, the just regular human insulins are being taken off the market. So it's if you were happy with your human insulin, it's getting harder and harder to find. So, you know, again, progress, yes, but progress that's useful and justifies those prices. That's really hard to say. And the generic issue is because these are biologics. They're made in cells. Each product is slightly different. It's very hard to make an exact copy because the companies that make the insulin own the cell lines that they're made into. So they're protected by multiple patents. And there, in fact, are a couple of big lawsuits now over whether companies should be allowed to produce not generics, because you can't produce an exactly identical molecule, but a biosimilar. But those will be in the courts for a long time. Mm.
Elizabeth, we've mostly been talking about type 1 diabetes. You also say in the article, though, that manufacturers are encouraging those with type 2, and that's a huge population in this country, to try insulin treatment and glucose monitoring, although it is rarely medically required. Why is that going on?
Well, you know, type 2 diabetes is a different animal. First of all, it's a huge market. I think it's, you know, 30 million people. And these are people who make insulin, so they very rarely need insulin injections or a pump. But, you know, part of the kind of moral and ethical problem of the commercialization of medicine is that the first line treatment for type 2 diabetes is weight loss and exercise and diet improvement. But there's really no money to be made in that. So people get very little support for doing those things. You know, their doctor may get paid minimally, but there's a lot of money to be made in convincing people that they need a medicine, and particularly an expensive medicine. So since we are one of two countries on Earth that allows for direct-to-consumer advertising, and we're big into promotion, people with diabetes describe being contacted repeatedly by companies trying to sell them stuff. Mm. And, you know, you see all the ads on late-night TV for other medical things.
Oh, my gosh,
So they'll go to their doctor and say, hey, I know I have type 2 diabetes. Maybe I should check my blood sugar, you know, 5 times a day. I need a meter to do that. Well, do you or don't you? I mean, that's really, most doctors would say most people with type 2 diabetes shouldn't be checking their blood sugar that often, not nearly that often. But there are plenty of companies out there that are happy to give you a meter and you know, sell you their test strips for $1.50 a pop so you can do so.
You know, you talk about the Affordable Care Act requiring health insurers to cover people with chronic disease. What does this act do in terms of helping the cost or adding to the overall cost of health care?
Well, I think the first thing you have to say is it's really a good thing in the abstract, because previously and all of the people I interviewed with type 1 diabetes were really grateful for the Affordable Care Act, as were their parents, because they said, you know, once they were 26, they would have become essentially uninsurable before the Affordable Care Act, because they had a serious pre-existing condition. Now they can get insurance, which is great if they don't have an employer who they can get it through. But so it will add to the costs in the sense that these people will be insured, which is a good thing. So I guess, you know, the Affordable Care Act will add costs in some ways, but this is a way that I think benefits everyone, because in the end, you know, you want people with chronic disease to live healthy, productive lives. You know, you may even prevent them in the long run from getting some of the serious complications of their diseases. So, you know, there is value, even if you're not talking about what's good for patients, there is economic value in this too.
We're going to continue our conversation with Elizabeth. This is an important article. Her whole series is extremely important. We'll go on to talk about why we've been mentioning type 1 diabetes. Why is it that endocrinologists, which she mentions in the article, remain among the lowest paid specialists in American medicine, and there are physician shortages in many areas. She also, and this always gets people worked up, most other developed countries with or without national health systems provide free care and supplies for people with chronic diseases. Elizabeth writes, they reason that the disease is a natural catastrophe that fells its victims unpredictably, and they bargain hard with drug and device makers to bring down list prices. For the most part, not happening in this country, but the differences in cost are just incredible, and you have to pause and ask, why is that the case? Here's our phone number. Please join the conversation for Elizabeth Rosenthal. The latest in her series, Pain Till It Hurts, was in the New York Times on April 5, entitled, Even Small Medical Advances Can Mean Big Jumps in Bills. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Elizabeth Rosenthal from the New York Times, and let's start with Catherine in Marshfield. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for this topic, and it's very passionate to me because I have two kids with diabetes.
Oh, yep.
One started off on syringes, and then the second one started off on syringes. And, of course, syringes are covered 100%, and you only can either deliver a unit or a half a unit at a time. And then one decided it was just not the best health that she wanted to be, and she wanted to have better coverage. So we decided to use a lot of our savings and buy an insulin pump. And you're mm-hmm. absolutely correct. We had to pay about $4,000 of that pump initially. Mm. And then our monthly costs for the supplies are roughly, $200 a month. And then child number two, who is also in college, decided that being able to just give a unit is not effective as a pump that would deliver 0.75 units of insulin. And so now we are back to purchasing another pump. And it's just frustrating to think that the insurance is willing to cover syringes and not have the kind of coverage and support and health that the kids could get, but the pump would give them much better insulin control, and the insurance companies won't cover that. And I think that's very frustrating as a parent to know that your children are going to have a lot of debt as they get older right. and off my medical plan. And so anyway, I'm so happy that you're talking about this and enlightening other people that it's not just you take medicine and you're better. It's a lifetime cost mm-hmm. to manage a yeah. chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, the people who I spoke to, most of the people in the article do use pumps. One thing they noted, which I'm sure you've experienced, is that insurance fluctuates a lot. So things that were covered one year are not covered the next. And I spoke to a lot of parents of college-age kids because managing the juggling the cost and the insurance and the different, you know, the changing models which change every year, and this the new test strips that are covered don't match the meter you have. It's really a full-time job, and you know, and it is life-saving and life-altering for people. I mean, I spoke to a parent whose son had just run a marathon with his pump, you know, and you know, meanwhile, she'd been on the phone for about 2 hours trying to get something covered that hadn't been.
Oh, my. Best of luck to you, Catherine. That's rough. And what was the story again of the guy who, as he called himself, was a pharmacist for crying out loud and had a daughter, I believe, in Nicaragua. Yeah. And he was trying to remember what they were trying to figure out.
Well, you hear, I heard that story over and over again from different people, but he is a pharmacist. He, so he understands drugs and devices and insurance coverage. His daughter, Erin, was teaching in Nicaragua when she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and she's stayed down there. She's come back for some adjusting her, getting her meds and stuff like that. But he, you know, does her purchasing every year and makes sure her supplies are up to date. And so on January 1st, as we all know, your insurance coverage can change. You know, some things that were on formulary aren't. And so, you know, he went in with four prescriptions to get Erin her new supplies and discovered that all four of them were no longer functional for different reasons. But a big problem was that the insurer now used a different kind of test strip, and it wasn't the test strip that went with her meter. So what was she going to do? Was he going to buy her a new meter? And in her case, the meter was attached to her pump, so it wasn't easy to just say, oh, we'll just swap this out. So you really, when you buy a monitoring, well, there's a metering system and a pump, and there's also a glucose monitoring system. You kind of buy into a world like you buy into Apple world, you know, where everything has to be compatible with everything else in order for it to work at its best. And that's really frustrating for people.
Judy is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Judy.
World like you buy into Apple.
Judy, you want to turn that old radio down?
With everything else in order.
We'll come back to you, Judy. You have to do that. Deb in La Crosse. Hi.
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 I just had a question. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm off of all my medicine except for I take a shot of Humira every other week. And I think Humira is just kind of like a wonder drug. I have a brother and a nephew that both have Crohn's. And they take Humira. And ever since all of us have been on Humira, we're doing really well. My question is, and I'm very fortunate that I have a good job, that my copay is very, very cheap because Humira has like a copay plus that you can use. But I'm just kind of wondering, why are the shots, why is the medicine so darn expensive?
All right, there's the question of the hour,
well,
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't gotten a good answer to that yet, although I've been asking a lot of that question further down in the article. And, it was mostly about type 1 diabetes, but we dealt with a patient who had a kind of rheumatoid arthritis who is taking a biological that is similar to Humira called Remicade. It's infused in a hospital. The bill for that infusion, one time, he takes it every 6 weeks, was $133,000.
Oh, no.
Right?
Are you serious?
Yep. Now, but the thing that's really that makes you realize it's no one part of our system. The drug, I called the hospital and said, how could you justify this? Or what was this about? And they said, well, he's a big guy on a high dose. It is an expensive drug. But in fact, the bulk of that billing was the hospital's charge for having him sit in an outpatient infusion clinic. So I think the problem is, you know, both the hospitals, the providers, and the pharma makers are doing quite well by this. And as our caller said, these are great drugs. I mean, this man had been on very high doses of steroids before he started getting his Remicade infusions. Mm. Now, P.S., he was so outraged by that price that he said, I'm not going to take it anymore. And he had good insurance. The insurer paid $97,000, you know, great bargain. Because he said, I just can't justify having my union insurer pay $100,000 every 6 weeks. So he's taking something he can give himself at home another shot. But they're expensive because they work. And which is, you know, this is a free market, as we say. Mm-hmm. They work really well. People want them and need them. And there's not competition because, again, these are biological drugs that we don't have generics for. Mm. So
Yeah, thank you very much, Deb. You write about the vial of insulin when you talk about other countries who provide all this for free, so they have a whole different philosophy. The vial of insulin analog that Ms. Haley, the aforementioned Ms. Haley, gets for $200 at an American pharmacy is typically bought by British pharmacists for under $30 and dispensed free. And then you get a response to why this is so from somebody who says the drugs and equipment makers operate in a global market. Our costs are higher because every other country applies price controls and we don't. What do you make of that? Is that true?
Well, it's certainly true. The two, you know, Medicare is forbidden to negotiate on price. So, and that's the body that could, in theory, do it. No, we don't have price controls on medicines in the U.S., and that makes us different than every other developed country. And of course, you know, what happens? Do you expect the makers of insulin, they're basically the big three, it's Sanofi, Lilly, and Novo Nordisk. They're not charities. You know, if they can charge more in the U.S., they will. And in fact, you know, there are some people who say they because these European countries are mostly bargaining really, really hard right now, some of them will say in Germany, we're not going to play in Germany. We're not going to sell. Is that because they're not making a profit? My expert said no. They're still making a profit, but their really good profits are in the U.S. So, right. You know, these are businesses.
Yeah. Judy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I also am taking Humira. And I'm also 67 and on Social Security. And last year I paid $6,000, more than $6,000 out of pocket. And I don't know how long I'll be able to do that. And I don't know. I just don't understand why Medicare Part D doesn't pay more. How can this be,
Elizabeth?
I think there's incredible frustration and outrage, and there should be about this. Part of the problem, and people get hit very badly when they become Medicare eligible. As this, and I'm not sure if this is what happened with this caller, but a lot of the new thing in the pharma world is if you're selling a really, really, really expensive drug, you have what's called a copay coupon, or you have a patient assistance program. So if you can't afford it, you can get in part of, you can get a copay coupon, which will pay your patient responsibility. Medicare, for pretty good reasons, says once you're Medicare eligible, you can't use those copay coupons, because the economic logic, which makes large economic sense but actually hurts individuals, is that the reason there are copays is to make patients kind of sensitive to how expensive these drugs are and to maybe encourage drug makers to pull down the price. And the way the drug makers have essentially bought off patients of younger ages is to say, okay, you know, your drug may cost $40,000 a pop, but we're going to pay your $5,000 responsibility, so it doesn't matter for you. Mm-hmm. Now, Medicare says, can't do that anymore. So what happens is when people turn 65, they're often really, really, really stuck with these huge costs, and there are problems with this Medicare donut hole. So they can be out many, many thousands of dollars just at a point in their lives when they probably need these medicines the most. It's really unfair.
Mm. Well, tell me how this happened with this particular area and how we get it to happen with others. You write that Medicare has not been allowed to bargain for insulin prices, but for the first time ever last year, they instituted competitive bidding for diabetic supplies, cutting reimbursements for test strips by about 60%. Why did it happen in that area, and will it be expanded to others?
Well, they are doing more of competitive bidding for diabetic supplies. I mean, the fact that Medicare can't negotiate for drug prices. prices was part of the Affordable Care Act, one part that many, or it was a concession that mm-hmm. was given to get the Affordable Care Act through. It's one that many people have serious qualms with, but it's a fact of life right now. And what you hear from people with type 1 diabetes is a lot of complaints about these test strips, which I've been told cost pennies to make. People use them 5 to 10 times a day to test their blood sugar because we know that close control of blood sugar is important. You adjust your meter or your shots to the results of that. And, you know, as one person in the story said, over-the-counter, they tend to cost $1.25 or $1.50 each. Each, so that really adds up.
Right.
So, you know, doing competitive bidding for test strips was kind of an obvious first step because there's so much room for to bring that price down. Even at, you know, 60 cents a piece or 70 cents a piece, there's still a really pretty profit. But in fact, you know, what you'll hear from people with type 1 diabetes is that a number of the test strip makers decided not to play. You know, they said, we're not going to go for a Medicare contract because we can still charge people, you know, insurers $1.50. So it's a really difficult situation. And I think patients are often the ones caught in the middle of this kind of battle that's going on above their heads.
Yeah. Elizabeth Rosenthal is our guest. She is working on this year-long series. We've had her on several times, and it's a really excellent series for the New York Times on Paying Till It Hurts. The current piece, which appeared a couple weeks ago on the front page of the Sunday Health section, even small medical advances can mean big jumps in bills. Elizabeth is also a doctor, so we're taking phone calls for her. We have one line open. We've been busy. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter @KDunnShow. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Elizabeth, and let's go to Ellen in Heartland. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Kathleen, and to your guest. My daughter was diagnosed with diabetes when she was 15 years old, type 1. She's 27 mm-hmm. now. I can tell you we've had to hold our breath many times because of the insurance things that are in place now with Obamacare that weren't. So when she graduated from undergrad, you know, we could not let her off. We can't let, you know, your kid be off of insurance because then you're going to do the whole pre-existing condition and she won't be able to get insurance. Luckily, she went on to, she's actually going to get her PhD next year. She'll be graduating. Luckily, the university put her on her insurance. We've paid her copay for the last 5 years while she's been working on her PhD because it's like a car payment every month. And I don't think people, if you haven't been through it, you don't understand mm-hmm. just the worry of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for my Obamacare. I'm going to say that right now because at least I know there's no way she can be denied insurance in the future if something would happen. But it is like paying a huge bill every month.
Yeah.
And if you're parents, you're not going to not do it.
Right.
You're not.
Right.
It's not a choice.
Yeah, right. Elizabeth.
And I think that's the truth. I mean, and why other countries say, you know, this is something that individuals, a price that individuals should not have to bear. Because, you know, when I was just 25 years ago, I remember it's a really serious, difficult condition to live with. At that time, there were lots of, you know, people developed kidney failure. They had vision problems. The current treatments are they're transformative of people's lives. So you're not going to say, as a parent or an individual, you're going to do whatever you need to get that. And I think that's, you know, it's one of those things where they say health is priceless. It kind of is, but then there's the reality that you have to write the check. So I do feel like with this particular disease, and for medicine in general, we need a better way to rein in prices because you can't make people choose between, you know, their kidneys and their house. That's not fair.
Right. No, it's not. Well, how is it that in these other countries you write about, the reasoning you say is that the disease is a natural catastrophe that fells its victims unpredictably? Well, what do we think disease is? What is our philosophy?
You know, that we're much more into the personal I don't even want to use the word responsibility because it's not personal responsibility. But, you know, with healthcare, we're into every man for himself. And that's our philosophy. And, you know, we believe that the market will solve problems. In our country, we have a much more market-based economy, and it does solve some kind of problems. But we also, in the healthcare system, as the series has pointed out, and there wouldn't be a series if this wasn't the case, there are multiple market failures, which mean we don't get good care and we pay a lot of money. And we're, you know, we really need to address those.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ellen, for your call. Camille in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Well, I have several things to say. Number one, I just came from the pharmacy for a treatment for restless leg, which is a direct response of diabetes, and the cost was $370 for 1 month's supply. Second of all, my second point is that I am retired now. I'm 67, and the reason I'm living on Social Security, and the reason I'm living on Social Security is that for many years I was paying my own medical costs because I didn't have insurance and drug costs. Mm-hmm. And the third thing I want, it's more of a question, is continuous glucose monitors are, I feel, the real solution to diabetic type 1 problems. And yet, they are totally out of my price range. I mean, they are thousands and thousands of dollars. And you know, it's totally because they refuse to make them available to people who can't afford them. They refuse to negotiate any kinds of cost structure. They are strictly in it for the money, and I understand that, but why can't we get some government program that would help me pay for something that might help me control my diabetes? Mm-hmm. I am not overweight. I have been 140 pounds for the whole time that I've had diabetes, which is 40 years. And I get lots of exercise. I simply cannot control my diabetes.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I mean, we're touching on here the kind of one of the newest controversies in diabetes management. There's something called a continuous glucose monitor, which it attaches under the skin, and it gives people with diabetes a good estimate of where their blood sugar is going at any given moment. It's continuous reading. Now, you know, it's controversial for two reasons. One is because these meters are not so accurate that they avoid finger sticks, but they do give, you know, my friend whose kids was running a marathon with diabetes, this meter allowed him to see along the route, should I take a glucose pill? Do I need more insulin? They're really invaluable. Some people don't need them. If you have really stable diabetes, you know that, you know, you check your sugar five times a day and adjust your insulin to that, and you don't need to know moment to moment. So it really varies a lot by the patient. But the two things are, these are very expensive. The people who make them, they cost about $600 or $700 for the meter. And that's not the big cost. The big cost is that you have to change the probe or the sensor and the transmitter every week, at least twice a week for the probe. So, and those each cost $100 a piece. So the costs are really, really high in the end. And Medicare says, I believe, we're not going to pay for these. Some insurers will, some won't. Medicare says, I believe, that they will not pay for them. So who's at fault here? It's like so many things in our system, and we have to think about who's the they. You know, are we angry at Medicare for not footing the bill? Or are we angry at the device makers for making this device cost thousands of dollars a year? You know, and are we angry at the promotional stuff that tells everyone they it pushes everyone to get them, when really people like our caller really do need them, who have unstable diabetes. But many people probably don't and are just fine without them. So, you know, it's a system that doesn't deliver, that costs a lot of money but doesn't deliver reliably care to people who need it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's center on the anger here for a moment, because there are a lot of people who are angry on all of those aforementioned fronts. And when I look at the importance of your series, I sometimes think that you, Elizabeth, and just a handful or of others are these lone voices in this wilderness that is amazing, that it's still a wilderness. Why is it that we, because it affects everybody. It affects the common Joe. It can, it affects government prices and what we can spend money on. There are so many problems. When we were looking at health care in this country year after year after year, why don't we have a major bipartisan, complete, thorough examination of all that you've been writing about?
Well, I hope we do. A part of the reason to do the series is to kind of I think that we, for a long time, have kind of bought the notion that there's no choice, that healthcare has to be expensive. Mm-hmm. And so that was what I wanted to look at. Well, why does it have to be expensive? Where is the money going? And I think what we've seen over and over again, what I've learned over and over again, is, boy, it's never cheap. You know, diabetes monitoring isn't cheap anywhere, but we're paying a lot more, and there's no reason why we're paying a lot more other than this market that allows us to pay more. So I'm hoping, you know, that we'll see more of a reaction. The other thing is, what do you do with that anger? You know, there's no ballot box. No politicians have really made it an issue.
Right.
And you're trying to get on with your life, like our last caller, you know. Your concern is, I need to get my diabetes medicine. You know, I need to get my diabetes under control. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what the first step is. I mean, I had this funny experience this week where my older child was in the emergency room, in New Jersey for 4 hours. She's in college and she was doing her senior thesis, and she had abdominal pain, and they thought at student health maybe she had appendicitis. Oh. So she was there for 5 hours. I'm a doctor, you know. I was like, oh, you don't have appendicitis. Oh. But yeah, I guess you better go get checked. 5 hours in that emergency room, the bill was $32,000.
Oh, my goodness.
For a $13,000 CAT scan and a nearly $10,000 ultrasound, what was I going to do? I could call the hospital and say, you know, what on earth are you thinking? You know, how dumb do you think we are? But I think my main concern is, well, my daughter's fine, and my insurer in the end paid $1,100, and I had my $50 copay. So I think, you know, people's first concern with their health is just trying to manage it, which is a real struggle in our healthcare system and almost a full-time job. Do you have the energy after that to demand change or dig deeper? Most people don't, but I hope. My goal is that they will now, and they'll look at these explanation of benefits and be writing to their congresspeople, and that politicians will be responsive, because if there is an issue that feels bipartisan now, it's that people are not happy with their health care.
Absolutely. So your daughter's okay?
She's great.
Good. Just cost a little money.
And a lot of outrage. I was carrying this bill around the office all week saying, you want to see something really outrageous?
They had no idea whose mother was.
Right.
All right, let's go to Marilyn in La Crosse. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have two questions, and I'll listen off the air. I'll preface it with saying I'm a Medicare age, and I have rheumatoid arthritis. But I was thinking, as I was listening to y'all, is there no entrepreneur that has a vested interest in someone that has diabetes that could maybe develop all of the supplies except for the insulin? You know, maybe someone could develop something that doesn't have to go through the drug company that could be cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there?
Again, I go back to the tech model. The main maker of insulin pumps is a company called Medtronic, which I'm sure you've all heard of. It controls about 65% of the U.S. market, and it is in a way like Microsoft Word on my computer. You know, yes, there are other programs I could use that would probably be cheaper, but everything works with Microsoft Word. I know it. It's familiar. It's complicated even more with the pump systems because your endocrinologist knows, in a good way and a bad way, the Medtronic rep. Medtronic has a wonderful big system for troubleshooting if you're having problems. So there are huge barriers to entry into this medical device market, some of them real and some of them artificial. So there are smaller startups that make pumps, and a lot of people like them. But you always run the risk. If my doctor prescribes me a pump from a small company, will it still be in business in a year?
Right.
Will they stop making supplies? If there's a problem at 3 a.m, do they have good customer service? There's a lot of fear of going to the underdog with a life-saving device. I mean, look how resistant people are to, like, not using Microsoft Word even. So, mm-hmm. it's a real issue. And I think there is worry that that we're maybe not looking at kind of more dramatic philosophies about diabetes, like curing the disease so you don't need all this stuff. Maybe we're not putting enough money into that because there's such a big industry in the treating of it rather than the curing of it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Marilyn. And you're a doctor, so I'll give you this question, too. Kathy from Mount Horeb is a nurse. She points out that these chronic diseases are all autoimmune diseases and wonders mm-hmm. if there is any prevention plan in the work or fields of study. Why are these happening?
Well, that's a bigger question, which I'm not very well equipped to answer. There's certainly a growth in the autoimmune diseases, and, there's a lot of questions about whether that's environmental, genetic, what sets them off. But I think there is a real concern that those kind of questions may not be answered as well. You know, not a lot of money is going into to that when all the money is into let's find a new treatment. If you can charge, $100,000 for an infusion of Remicade, there's not a lot of incentive for a pharma company to be working at, well, let's get rid of rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. Marty in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just had a couple of comments. The first was I had to quit working because of a disability, and I'm waiting to hear whether or not I get disability coverage from Social Security. So I don't have insurance, and my wife and I were scrounging around for the money for a number of medications. She's diabetic, and she has high blood pressure. And we found GoodRx online, which was a free site started by a couple of guys who needed prescriptions. If you go there, you can plug in your zip code and the drug that you're looking for, the dosage and the quantity per month, it will give you the best prices at all the local pharmacies, and it will give you, in many cases, coupons to take to those pharmacies. And so we were able to save literally $400 or $500 a month.
Wow. Are you familiar with this, Elizabeth?
Yeah. It's actually a great resource. It's goodrx.com.
Okay.
The only thing I would say, because I tried to use it, the kind of absurd position people with insurance will find is that your copay, the prices on GoodRx are often so good with these coupons that they're better than your copay with insurance. So yes, I think it's a great thing for people who don't have good drug insurance or who have no insurance. Many of the coupons will not work if you have insurance. So if you go there and say, wow, I'd like the, I have a coupon for $40 for Augmentin, they'll say, oh, do you have insurance? And if you do, you can't use those coupons. So that's the one caveat.
Okay.
But it's a great resource.
Yeah, thanks, Marty, very much. It's good to end on some kind of positive note. Elizabeth, thank you very much for all that you're doing. It's terrific and so important. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. There'll be more.
I know. We'll look forward to having you on again. Elizabeth Rosenthal, she is working on a year-long series on healthcare costs, Pay Till It Hurts, and her current piece, which will be on our Facebook page if you didn't see it. The Kathleen Dunn Show is on what we've been talking about this whole hour of the program. Even small medical advances can mean big jumps in bills. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. And thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee.